Welcome to the Leave Better podcast, where we coach you how to overcome what's holding you back from your next level. Our goal is for you to win in your business and life. Join us in engaging conversations with extraordinary people. Here's your host, certified coach and licensed therapist, Miriam Gunn.
Hey friends, today I am super happy to have Greg Hickman with us today. He is someone I'm going to be as bold to call a friend. I took a class from him in the fall with his company, Alt Agency. Their mission is to help every agency owner or service provider basically create a situation where they can provide abundantly for their family. They help you productize your service so that you can just do a better job getting it out to the people you serve. So anyway, I loved the course. It was super fun, Greg, and I'm so appreciative that you'd be willing to spend some time today with us.
My pleasure.
Excellent. So I think where I want to start with this is you are in a space where you're someone I would call pretty doggone successful. You have gone from a place, I mean, you're in a multi-million dollar business at this point, and it wasn't always that way. So I would like to hear a little bit of your journey from how you started thinking about what it is that you help people with.
Yeah. So I kind of fell into what we're doing now. I was kind of an ex-agency client side brat, if you will, who left the agency space after the better part of a decade or two decades. And I started using a tool called Infusionsoft, which is like a marketing automation tool. I had been researching, you know, growing a business and stuff like that, listening to podcasts, and came across like, you know, online entrepreneurship and a handful of people that were actually using this Infusionsoft tool. And I was like, wait, these people inspire me. I could help them. And so I kind of became like my own agency was really like behind the scenes of these like influencers, if you will, authors, speakers, coaches, building out their like marketing automation, their webinar funnels and all that. And what happened was we were like most agencies that at least we talk to now, like full capacity, don't really have the bandwidth yet. We're not making as much money as we'd like. Working nights and weekends, I was on a sales call and like really could help the person, but like just didn't have the bandwidth, like no more hours left in the week. And I said, look, like I have a wait list, but I can show you how to do it yourself. And I charged them 50% of what we normally charge to do it for them. And he was like, I'm in. And I got off the call and I was like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
I don't even know what I just sold this person. Like I just sold him that I'm going to show him how I do what I do. And then, so I met with him a couple of times. I gave him stuff that I had built over the years and examples, and he just went and did it. And he like loved it. I was like, wait, there's something to this. And then did that enough times. And people like yourself, other agency owners, other service providers just started like hearing about it from me talking about my own journey on a podcast that I had and YouTube. And so we kind of like hung the agency hat up, if you will, and kind of went all in on training others how to productize their service. And we've been doing that since 2017.
Let me see if I've got this right.
Yes.
So at one point you worked for someone else, like you traded your hours for money for someone who was your employer. And you were like, this kind of sucks. I'm done with this. And you went out on your own, still doing the same skill set. You were doing it for the entrepreneur. They would come to you and say, I need funnels. I need this. I need that. I need marketing. And you said, I'm your guy. And you did it.
Before I went out on my own, my last employer was Cabela's. I was the head of their mobile marketing department and their digital marketing team. And so that was like my last like employer. And so we had been working with, you know, outdoor retail. And so when I went out on my own, my first like attempt at working for myself was, well, I'm just going to help the smaller Cabela's do what I did for Cabela's. And that was really difficult because independent retail is like 10 years behind everything. And so like, it was really difficult to get really any traction. I was kind of like stuck at like 5K a month and like hitting my head against the wall when the automation thing for the online entrepreneurs thing happened. So the first go was not pretty, and the second go was a slow start. So
it wasn't just automatic. Okay. And I just think that people need to hear that, because there is something in our, I think potentially the fact that there is Google and YouTube and you can look anything up makes people think, it's not that hard. No, it actually is really hard, you know, in some places. And there's a learning curve. And what I hear you saying is, you knew you hated working for someone else, and you're like, why can I not do the same thing that I do for them? Why can I not do it for me? And then you found out there's a bit of a learning curve there. How did you coach yourself through that space of, first of all, it's super scary to leave a business where you're being paid and your insurance is being taken care of.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, I'm going to start on my own. I mean, I assume at that point you were married and had little people. I know you have little people now.
No
little people.
I actually proposed to my now wife, sold my house, and quit that job at Cabela's all within a matter of 3 weeks. And that was 2013. And so I finished out the year with Cabela's and full time on my own 2014.
Okay.
And have been since. It's like I was living in Denver. My now wife, she was just finishing med school and was going to be matched, if anyone's familiar with that process. Like, so she was likely going to be anywhere in the country but Denver. And so the market was really good, and I sold my house that my nice six figure salary from before was giving me. And I used that as like a safety net for going out on my own. I had some side business. It wasn't like a full leap like some stories. I was generating some money on the side, enough to like cover my rent and most of my expenses. But I also had the savings and safety net from selling my home, which was a bold move. And I wish I did not. In hindsight, while I don't say I regret it, but like, it would be worth way more now, because it was in like it was in an up and coming area in Denver, sure, and it blew up, and it's like, man, I could have gotten a lot more if I held on. But nonetheless, I was anticipating having to move somewhere across the country, and then my wife matched here. So, but it still was that it was definitely nice knowing that I had that like a runway that I knew would last me a couple years.
Yeah, which I think actually is super important. I always tell people, build the other side of your bridge that you're going to walk from A to B. Don't just leap without a parachute, because that is called gambling. That is not called entrepreneurship.
Yeah, there is a point where like you need to kind of draw the line, especially if it's like, I think, drags out too long. Because if the side thing does pick up enough traction, it will create a lot of friction. And there is still that little bit of a leap of like, well, this thing isn't going to grow any more than it is unless I have more bandwidth to put towards it. And that bandwidth is going to come from me leaving the thing that is currently safe, which is why for me, having sold my house, it was like, all right, like I have this nest to, you know, use if needed, which was definitely used.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you saying that. I think that we don't talk enough in the entrepreneurial space about the fear that can really keep you from making the move you need to make. Sometimes the fear is wisdom, and it keeps you from making the move that will destroy you. But there is a space where if you're really going to do it, you have to say, okay, what do they say? I'm going to burn my ships. I'm burning the ships.
Burn the ships. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think you just have to, as an entrepreneur, I think like you just have to learn how to operate with a certain level of fear. Because like, it's not going to go away. Like there's still moments where I operate out of fear sometimes. And I know people well ahead of me that would agree. So it's like, it's not like, oh, when I've reached X, I won't be afraid. Like that's a fantasy. Like you'll be afraid of something at some point. And yeah, so it's like, okay, cool. Like I just have to learn how to operate with a little bit of that in my life. However,
that feels like wisdom.
Yeah. One thing that I actually just shared this earlier in especially around like the leaping part, or like finally, you know, the example of like Tarzan, like you gotta let go of the last vine to reach the new one. Like there's that moment where it's like, you can't be just holding on to both, you know?
Yeah.
And if you think of like two, like a Venn diagram, like two circles overlapping, and one is fear and one is excitement, like that's the overlap, that sweet spot, I think is actually like the perfect place. Because if you're all fear and zero excitement, I would say that you're not ready. And then mm-hmm. if you're all excitement and no fear, I would say that you're probably not taking whatever the thing is serious enough. And so you kind of need a little bit of both.
Yeah, so, yeah, I would agree with you in not only just business, but also life. That plays out in a lot of other things, like relationships or big purchases.
For sure.
Let's talk about maybe some self-sabotaging mindsets, thoughts, or behaviors you saw in yourself earlier in life. How did they hold you back? How did you address them? How were you released from them?
If I'm honest, I am not fully released from them. They still find their way in and out of my life. That's a good question. I mean, I think one of my mentors, Dan Martell, he calls them entrepreneurial hand grenades. It's like you have something going well, and then like you kind of just throw the grenade and blow it up and start from scratch, because you feel comfortable in the phase from starting to where you were at, where you decided to self-sabotage. And it's like, because going to the next level is uncomfortable, there's uncertainty, you don't know. And so I feel like that's usually where I've found myself wanting to potentially self-sabotage. So once I kind of learned and realized and became self-aware of that, the biggest thing I did was just surround myself with other like-minded people, which came by the way of investing in coaching programs and masterminds and being around other people that would understand what I was going through and would be a filter for, hey, this is what I'm feeling and thinking. This is what I'm thinking about doing. Is in any way, does this sound like I'm self-sabotaging? You know, like, and I had that conversation 2 days ago, like, me calling someone saying, this is what's happening, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Is this a dumb idea? Like, does this sound like I'm retreating, or does this sound like I'm like thinking about this with a smart mind? And you have to like run it through, because, you know, you can't see you can't see the label from inside the bottle. And so you gotta be able to get external help from someone that gets it, I think. So I'm definitely guilty of it to this day. I don't think this should not be talked about, but like I started seeing a therapist, and she introduced the concept, which was very new to me, cognitive distortions. And she sent me this list of like the top, I don't know, 11 cognitive distortions. And I was like, within seconds of reading each one, I had like an example and or like very recent story of me doing the thing that I just read. I was like, I operate like, this almost is like an operating manual for me. What is going on? This just sounds horrible, but like it all started to make sense. Like I didn't know what these things were. And so now understanding that those are there, and again, having someone to talk to about it has been like extremely helpful.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying all of those things. It takes a certain amount of humility to be able to say, I'm going to get someone else's eyes on this and hear from them, not get defensive, not push back, not tell them why they're wrong, not make excuses, just hear from them and see if they have a different perspective. You know, that's what I hear you're doing with your mastermind groups, with your mentors. And I am a therapist also, as well as a coach. Yeah. So I can appreciate what you're saying, and I understand cognitive distortions. We all have them.
Yeah. And I would argue, I actually tweeted it this morning because I was talking with a friend about my therapist, and I was like, me and my wife, we worked with a marriage counselor once for a little bit. So like that was like up until now, my most recent, I'd say, dealing with some sort of therapy. I'm only like a month or so in, so still very new, but like three calls is like the exercises, like it really has you seeing things differently. And it just kind of dawned on me like this morning in this conversation. And I said, man, like so many entrepreneurs are like out here looking for a coach when like they should probably go get a therapist. Like,
yeah.
And like it's, and I still haven't quite nailed the difference, but like, I think there's a need for both. And so, yeah. I mean, to have the skills of both in one is pretty sweet. But yeah, I mean, super, super insightful. I mean, introspective. Yeah, it's, I think, much needed for most entrepreneurs should probably have a therapist.
Yeah, opinion. Can you share? I mean, you said there's like this whole list of cognitive distortions. Can you share a couple that stick out to you where you're like, ah, oh, I do this all the time or whatever?
Yeah, totally. Let me just pull up that list because there were a lot of them. And I've looked up a couple different times and some of them, some places label the same thing with a different label. So sure. Overgeneralization. So overgeneralization, when you overgeneralize something, you can take an isolated negative event and turn it into a never ending pattern of loss and defeat.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's always this way.
Perfect example. One client says something bad. All of my clients hate us. Uh-huh. Like that's a, like all the time.
Yeah.
Jumping to conclusions and like, the people listening, if you've never even heard of cognitive distortions, like which I didn't, but like I've heard of jumping to conclusions. Sure. And like when you look at that as people operate this way, like yeah. And how like toxic it could be. Personalization. So it leads you to believe that you're responsible for events that in reality are completely or partially out of your control daily. One of them was, and this list that I'm looking at has a different name for it. At least I've not found it. It was like all or nothing or something like that. Like, or black, mm-hmm. black and white, mm-hmm. where it's like looking at everything as like either or, and it can't be like situational or so. Yeah, I definitely, oh yeah. All or nothing polarization or all or nothing thinking. Totally. Like when you engage in thoughts of black or white with no shades of gray, this type of cognitive distortion is leading you. Yeah, I've definitely felt that. It leads to extremely unrealistic standards for yourself and others that could affect your relationships and motivation. 100%. I mean, I can't think of an entrepreneur that probably hasn't thought about that. Like, if I don't make X million, my business is a failure. It's like, yeah. Okay, well, what about like a half a million less than that? Are you still a failure? Like, why that number? Like, it's right. Like, it's like, it has to be that thing. And there's like no real, it makes no sense. But yeah. I do that. I've definitely been guilty of it.
Well, I've seen this in businesses where if your revenue doesn't go up every single year, you're a failure somehow, even though you're making more this year than last year. And when is it enough? And most people don't have any answers for that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I was doing some consulting in a company and they had one of those little charts that shows your revenue. It was like 5 million, 5, 6 million, 7 million, 15 million, 17 million, down, down, down. And the last one went off the chart the other direction. So it wasn't the 5 million. And they were all like, oh my gosh, we're all going to lose our jobs. We're failing or whatever. And I'm going, what was your projected growth for that year? And it was something like 12 million. What did you guys make? 77 million. I don't think you were failures.
Yeah.
But because, you know, this weird, that is a cognitive distortion right there is if you're not always going up and to the right, oh, I guess we suck.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
100%.
So do they have one on there called magical thinking? That's what I always see entrepreneurs doing.
Not on this list, not but it might be called list. It might be called something else. Like,
my wife
likely won't listen to this, but she does one also. It's called always being right. that's on here. So,
what you
just thought was your wife being your wife is actually a cognitive distortion. So, you guys should all sleep well tonight knowing that your spouse.
I was going to say, I think that can go both ways, Greg. I think this is a fascinating topic and I'm so glad you brought it up because it isn't one that I've talked about on my podcast before. Mm. And it is one that plagues entrepreneurs everywhere. And honestly, just human beings.
Yeah, for sure.
It's why it's the thing. So let's switch the topic just a little bit. If you were to turn back time, what would you say to younger Greg? And at what age would you say this? based on what you know now?
Man, that's a good question. I would say, what I would probably say is make sure you define what success looks like and feels like for you. Mm. And like have it written down. So I would definitely say that. And what was the second part of the question? And
well, why? First, why would you say that? The second part of the question is, at what age would you go back in time to tell that version of you? Now, some of these things we got to know really early, and some maybe a little later in life.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go back as far as part of me wants to say like 24.
Okay.
For the record, for anyone listening, I'm 40. So like, I don't know, like when I'm like in the early stage workforce, like trying to figure out what I want to do. Yeah. I met my wife.
True adulthood.
Yeah. You know, like you were, yeah, like when you're actually starting to think about what you want and what you care about. Yeah. So I think that somewhere in my early to mid 20s.
Yeah. So you would say, hey, let's define younger me. Let's define what success is so we know what we're chasing. Tell me how your ideas of success have shifted and changed from 24 to 44.
Oh, easy. They're mine and not somebody else's.
Yeah. So what did it look like when they were somebody else's?
Well, like it was a lot about what people had and like what I thought their lifestyle looked like or how big their business was, like random arbitrary numbers, things like that, or certain maybe accolades or recognition, blah, blah, blah. And what it is now, it's more about peace. And I'll even read some of them to you because I have a little document that I read in the morning that reminds me of what it is. So success to me, the business is big enough and profitable enough for me to hit my money goals and my team to hit theirs. I can wake up every day and ask, what would I like to do today? My passive, and I put passive in quotes, revenue income exceeds my lifestyle needs. I'm working on projects that excite me and allow me to do my best work. I can disappear for several months with no effect on my income. There are no whiny people in my life. I have no time obligations or deadlines. I work with great people making great things, being a good example to my children, Sarah, my family, team, and peers as a good husband, leader, mentor, and life liver. Having a marriage and life that inspires our children and even family and friends around us to be better. Having a team that is winning at life, not just in business. And then happy clients that share how we've helped without asking, and even sometimes when we do. Nice. So that's like reminders of what, like, and for anyone that just listened to that, please recognize that there's not a single number or dollar sign in any of that, and or item, you know, material thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's like the huge swing. And, you know, to your point earlier, like YouTube, all this stuff, like I have been so, and this is very recent for me too, like, and I'm still working on this all the time because I think it's with the way that our world works and our, like, the amount of information at our fingertips, I think it's very easy, because it happened to me, for us to blindly adopt someone else's goals and or definition of success and operate as if they were our own, which is weird because you end up feeling, at least like I did, that you're like in this race and you're losing, then you didn't even realize you entered the race. Like you're like, you just feel like you're losing and like competing. And you're like, I never knew that I was in a competition, you know? And it's a pretty crappy feeling. And what's actually interesting, if I can, I don't know if you know of or heard of Todd Herman, wrote the alter ego effect and New York Times bestseller. He's a high performance coach, worked with a lot of like professional Olympic athletes and entrepreneurs. And he's one of the first people to teach entrepreneurs the way that he teaches people in sport. And he tells this story of he was working with like a famous athlete, I forget what sport, and he made the comment that coaching entrepreneurs is like infinitely harder than coaching an athlete. And the athlete, like, who is, I think played in Wimbledon, it might played in like like we would all know the person's name if he had said the name. That's how well known they were. I was shocked that it was harder to do mental fitness, mental performance for an entrepreneur than an athlete. And the reason was so insightful, tied to just this, was he goes, when you step on the tennis court, the net's already up, the lines are already on the court, and you know the rules of the game. Most entrepreneurs jump into business, they never drew the lines for their own court, their own field of play, and they never made the rules. Like, so they just went out there and were figuring it out. And it's like, how do you win a game, or how do you at least feel like you're making progress if you don't know the rules? Like, you don't even know what strategies to use if you don't know the rules. Like, so you could be going down some tactical rabbit hole using the wrong strategies simply because you don't know what the rules are and or what's inbounds, what's out of bounds. And so like that really hit home. And it was like, as entrepreneurs, and I think honestly just in life, like we need to draw the lines of our own field of play and make our own rules, because we live in a time where we can, which is great. And like, then play by them, because if we're just like blindly operating and we see ourselves losing, like that person might be playing a completely different game and have a different strategy than you. And you probably shouldn't even follow it. And so like, but yet you compare yourself as if you were losing compared to them, but you never kind of defined your own field of play. Like that was like, man, like I was operating that way. You see someone saying, I have a whatever figure business and, you know, X employees and served blah, 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 featured in blah, blah, blah. And you're like, that's what I need to get to or else I'm not successful. And then like, when I really think about it, I was like, man, if I could take Fridays off, which I do, and I can mountain bike 2 to 3 times a week when it's not snowing, I do. I get to drop my kids off and pick them up every single day from school, which I do. I'm like, that's winning to me. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm already successful. like I'm there, like I'm doing it. And so I don't know if that's just like getting older and you just because of wisdom and then also having kids, but yeah, like my definition and my of that and my desire of what I want is has changed. And one other thing that he said, sorry, I'm on a rant, is that, you know, because this was happening in a mastermind that we're all in. And one of them posted, like the leader of this mastermind posted, the most difficult thing, arguably in life, is to know what you want. And Todd replied and said, actually, it's not knowing what you want. It's admitting what you want, because you're afraid of what other people will think of you once you admit what you want, if it's what not what they want or something that they might think is not that great. It's like, we're actually thinking like that. And he goes, what we need to do is obviously not worry about what other people think, but the, and this is something I was getting hung up on, maybe it's that all or nothing cognitive distortion. The, is like, we all go through seasons of life and like I was making decisions. I'm like, well, if I got to do this in 5 years from now, here's what I got to do now. Sort of behavior. And he was like, you know, it's okay to want what you want right now and not have to tie it to like permanence. Like you can want what you want for the next 2-3 years of life as a season. And guess what? Like your kids go to school and like, you're going to want something different and you'll be in a different season and you'll have different motives to go pursue that. He's like, stop making decisions as if the decision you make now and or the thing you want now is something that you're going to have to say you want forever. Like, disconnect from the forever thing, because that's not how it works. Like, you can want something for the next 3 years and then want something different. And I was like, oh my God, like took the shackles off. It was like so freeing. Yeah. Like, I think that's why I would say that to myself, because for years I was just like, probably felt way worse about myself than I really needed to.
Yeah. Well, at the heart of all of that you're talking about, it has to do with comparison and individuation. This ability to say, I'm going to compare the me of today to the me of yesterday instead of the me of today to the you of, you know, whatever. If I compare to you, we're in completely different places. You've been in your business twice as long as I've been in mine, and we are chasing different things, et cetera, et cetera. And so how do we become okay with comparing the me of today to the me of yesterday? Like, there had to be, I'm sure it was gradual, where this space in you of what you wanted not only became more clear, but also you became better at not comparing to the other person. Do you have any kind of thoughts on how it is that you made that transition?
Yeah. And I'll still, again, honesty, still struggle with some of the comparison stuff.
We all do.
Writing it down. Yeah. Writing it down. I mean, like, I literally, for those that aren't watching a video of this, I read off of a document that is called my morning ritual document. And it has a bunch of bullets for daily reminders, some bullets around my immediate goals. And then those bullets that I read to you that were my definition of success. So it's like, I feel like every morning, and I don't do it every morning, but I do it most mornings, just whip open my phone and I read it on my phone while I'm having coffee. It's like my like daily recalibration of like, hey, like, let me start from a place of like, I know what game I'm playing, remind myself of the rules that I'm playing by, so that when I know that I scroll on Instagram and I see the thing that I don't want to see, or not that I don't want to see, that then could influence that, I'm like coming from a place of like, I started grounded. So that's one, right? Which shockingly takes time. Like so making space, like disconnected, like on a pen and paper, ideally to go write like on some of these things. And I think as busy entrepreneurs, I mean, it's so much easier just to like, oh, I'll take what she has and I'll adopt that goal. And that sounds nice. Like scrolling through Instagram, I like that, heart that, bookmark that. That's going to become my belief. It's so easy to collect other people's goals and beliefs and like not create and define your own, because it takes time and it takes work and we're busy, you know? So it's like, you got to like pull yourself out and disconnect and like spend some genuine time trying to do that. And I think that's kind of when I finally just said, okay, like I need to do this. It really started coaches, mentors, therapists, active conversation, because this is not like a set it and forget it thing. Like it's, you know, every day, like you're on the battlefield, you know, you got to deal with these things. So that's helpful. I unfollow, like if I'm on social media, which I try not to be on as much, but like Instagram, like I love Instagram, but I don't follow anymore a lot of business people. It's like where I follow like all my mountain bike outdoorsy type content that like lights me up and inspires me. Not like, but if I scroll by anything on Facebook, Instagram, that is someone else, and I catch whether they're like, by the way, I do this with some of my friends, like peers, mentors, where like I catch myself feeling bad about myself or less than from their message, which obviously has nothing to do with them, everything to do with me. I will unfollow them, or like in Instagram, you can like mute people for 30 days. I use that feature all the time, like mute for 30 days. Like, let me see if when it comes back up, if I'm still feeling that way, mute them again or unfollow or unfriend, and just like cleaning out the input, right? Like our output's only as good as our input. And so I go through waves, just like anyone, throttle that and like filter that, and, you know, constantly pruning what are my inputs. So that's like the tactical things that I did that helped me. One other thing that I did, which I may or may not have told you on one of our calls, I don't know how this necessarily ties to it, but it helps me. I try to have something on my calendar every 48 hours that like I'm looking forward to, that's like not business related, mm-hmm. whether that's like a workout or like going for a ride, or we're having, you know, XYZ friend over for, you know, dinner, date night, you know, oh, this, we're going to watch this movie this night, this week. Like I try to have something related as much as possible. Some of those things that I look forward to are entrepreneurial, but yeah, having that on my calendar is really helpful.
What's your best guess? I love this idea. You're the first person who's mentioned this kind of frequency. What's your best guess as to the 48 hours? Like I've heard some influencers say, you know, every 90 days, make sure you have something relatively big to look forward to. Why 48 hours?
I mean, I don't think it takes like, I don't think it needs to be a big thing. So I don't know. I'm a believer of like 1% better every day. And so like I know me, like this morning, something I've been experimenting with just in the last like 60 days is like, I'd rather work out 6 days a week for 20 minutes than work out 3 days a week for an hour or 2 hours. And so like, I went in and I picked four exercises, and I did five sets of bunch of exercises, and I was done in like 18 minutes, and I feel good. And like I yesterday, and I'll do it again tomorrow. And I don't feel like I'm like, it fits with my schedule right now. So like the little doses for me work really, really well. 90 days is long. I mean, it's not, but it is. And like, I do have big things that I work on. But I don't know, like the big things are made up of a lot of little things. So
yeah.
Why not focus on those?
I love it. I mean, I think that there's something to that. It reminds you that your life is more than your business, and you're stacking up small wins that, you know, will work for you. I unfortunately am paying attention to the time and realize we probably need to draw this to a close, but one fun question, then I'll let you, you know, share how people can find you. This is kind of a weird, this is a Tim Ferriss question. In the last 6 to 12 months, what have you purchased $100 or less that you're just like, oh my gosh, I love this thing?
Oh man, I feel like I have the king of $100 purchases in the last 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
This is like 6 days. This is arguably the best water bottle that I've ever had in my entire life. Owala. I bought two of them, a 24 ounce and a 32 ounce. The like mouth lid, for those listening, I'm like showing the water bottle right now. It's like $24, I think, on Amazon. Some YouTuber that I follow did a review on it and is like, this is the only water bottle you ever need. And I'm like, I need a new water bottle. Done. Amazing. I'm going to give you one more just because I also love it. And it was tough to decide. There's this company called Ugg Monk, and they have this thing called Analog. I'm a huge Analog fan, meaning just actual, the word analog, like not digital, but they have this tool called Analog, and it's this little wooden tray, and they have these to-do cards. It's like you put the date on top and you write your to-do list, and you just, there's a little stand and you can have it right in front of you. And then it's a tray that has all of them inside, and they have ones that are white that say to do or today. And then they have ones that say next, and they have ones that say someday. And it's a little magnetic. I think it's like just over $100, but like I take my to-do list and I put it for the day on here, and I close the digital to-do list because I like feel so much better crossing things off. And there's a little note, like kind of like notes grid on the back. I love this thing. Like, and there's a little travel pouch you can get for it. If I travel, like I bring a couple blank ones and I write my to-do list on there.
I love it. It's clear. I mean, your voice got excited, your face lit up. And for people who are listening,
I like look at it.
I mean, it looks like it's black walnut. It looks really attractive. So
they have
fun.
A couple different colors.
Okay. I'll put it in the show notes just because I just think it's fun to see. One of the problems with algorithms is you see more of the same. And unless you have someone, you know, like give you a different idea, you just see more of the same. So it's kind of fun to hear what other people are buying, and thanks for those ideas.
For sure. Under $100 purchases is like, I make a lot of them.
Oh my goodness. Well, before we have you share how people can get a hold of you and look into your program and stuff, I just wanted to mention, you know, before we got on, I talked about how we like to do a donation in your name just as a thank you for your time. And the charity you chose is Best Friends, bestfriends.org. They are really committed to ending senseless euthanasia in animal shelters across the U.S. by 2025. They're going to do it. I mean, I'm looking at their numbers. They've been at it for about 15 years. I'm so excited. I get to interview the CEO next week. That podcast will probably land maybe a month from now. But anyway, we're going to do that in your name. And thank you for your time, Greg. And why don't you just tell people how they can find you?
super simple. I would say if you want more of what I was talking about, I have a YouTube channel where I release a video every single week. And the fastest way to get there is just go to gregsvideos.com and it'll redirect you right to my YouTube channel, or you could just Greg Hickman on YouTube and you'll find it.
That's so fun. Gregsvideos.com. How many people have that URL? Well, just you, obviously.
Just me.
yep. It's good. Well, Greg, it's super fun to just see you again. And again, thank you for your time and wisdom.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to pursue more in the self-development realm for you and your business, contact us at leavebetter.com, where you leave better, and in addition, you leave the people and earth around you better as well. Think about this. Where you are currently is as a result of the decisions you made 6 months ago. Similarly, the actions you take today set you up for 6 months from now. So do something today that pushes you toward that next level of you. One last thing before you go. Become the dealer of growth in your sphere of influence by sharing this episode with two friends. And if you'd like to help me personally, leave a review, because yes, that actually does help. Now, go be intentional.